There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Sex with you. The Nerdist Podcast. The Nerdist. The Nerdist. He's nervous for the podcast to begin, and then it begins.
So that's the, I hope you guys like the theme song. I paid this Ecuadorian gentleman I met $30,000 to make it, just so I could have the rights for it forever, you know?
Yeah, no, it's funny, because like, we waited so long for it to happen, and it really is worth it.
It was. We were going to start this 3 months ago, and I was like, no, I want the theme song to be just right.
You got to have the right theme song before you get into a podcast.
And I was like, Señor Abuelito, should we... You know, do you want some instrumentation or do you want some any orchestration? And he was like, no, I want it to be retro.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I think it was worth it. It was worth every penny. It was worth every penny. Is his microphone okay?
I think, go ahead.
Did it receive all my funnies before that moment?
It got him, but okay.
Your funnies
not
are peaking.
As well as these.
your funnies should never go into the red. Just green, like right barely into the red.
I like to keep it at maybe with 2 bars of sound.
So this is essentially the first Nerdist branded podcast.
Essentially, or is?
Well, it is. It is. It's like the no. It is the yeah. Thing. This is funny. I was actually when Matt Myra right here, Mac Genius, is running the podcast, technologically.
Hi.
And, Jonah Ray is over there on no ones and twos that I can see at all.
There's one right here. The microphone.
All right. Well, there's no twos.
I can't tell if Jonah's just ambiently picking up or if that's coming off his microphone.
Can you tell now?
Oh yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So he is being picked up.
Good.
You better believe it.
Well, it's funny. When Matthew and I met at a Starbucks to talk about doing the podcast, and there was a girl who recognized the barista, and he recognized... Well, that's what they're called. And he recognized her, and she said, yeah, isn't your name Taylor? And he goes, yeah. Aren't you Shelley? And she's like, yeah. And they recognized her, and she goes, yeah, because I was all like, I know that guy. And I felt like saying, "You first of all, you weren't all like you. That's exactly how you were. And you still are, presently." And it's funny to me how people don't want to claim responsibility for the present. They want to create this time wall of distance so they don't have to commit to anything.
Previously, four seconds ago,
yeah,
I was like that.
And to be able to do that as soon as you can is great. Like, you know, like the same thing was like, someone walks in, it's like, oh, yeah. When you walked in, I was all like, who is this guy?
I also think it's harder to be judged in the past. And like in the present, you have to take more responsibility for it.
That's true.
Because if she's like, because you said, oh, if I feel like this now, he could be like, you're dumb now. But in the past, I'm not like that anymore. I'm not committed through. I'm just in a weird time mode because I just got into the David Tennant episodes of Doctor Who, and so everything to me is a weird time stream.
Just in case you weren't wondering,
this is how people talk on Super Bowl Sunday who don't understand sports. It is Super Bowl Sunday, and none of us are watching the Super Bowl.
I really hope my favorite sports team is winning the match today.
Are they going to?
I really do. I hope.
How many points do you think they will acquire?
All the points. necessary to win
the maximum number of points. The
maximum number of points to win the match, and I hope that my favorite color scheme is getting rooted for. But in the end, I really hope they all have a fun time.
Well, I mean, the important thing is that, you know, when you root for a team, you are on that team, so you should take it as importantly as anything that you would undertake yourself.
Unless your favorite team has already lost the matches necessary to get to the big game.
Well, then they're not my team, and they should get rid of their coaching unit. They should get rid of their coaching person.
Coach 5000.
Their head.
This computer's not making the greatest plays anymore.
I've never. Both my parents are sports fanatics, and I'm just not. I did not get that gene. I can't be into something if I feel like I'm not. If I can't participate in it, I don't understand it. Maybe that's just part of my self-centered nature.
I had a resentment towards sports growing up, just because my dad played football, and he never really forced me to get into it, but society did because of my size. It's like every time I got into a new school, it was always like, are you going to play basketball because you're tall? Are you going to play football? Because
my dad didn't force me to get into it. He just withheld food and hugs until I'd said that I wanted to put on a uniform.
You know, you can go about 2 weeks without a hug.
Really?
Yeah, scientifically.
That's and then after
possibly.
2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Because Tom's just sitting here, and I want Tom to be involved.
I didn't know that we were. I thought we were kind of like pretend there's going to be a grand entrance.
I know, but I just feel stupid. Like I feel stupid with the charade. Like, oh, you're,
right, it is pretty weird because I'm literally just perched
right
on
here.
A chair giggling,
and you have funny things to say, and you should
not
be
really.
So let me just quickly introduce Tom Lennon. Tom Lennon is here.
Yay!
Do you add sound effects to the nerd?
We're
going to
add some slide whistle and a little bit of hand fart.
Hang on.
And
this is going to be 8-bit crowd cheering from Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Now what you? Now what? Foley is a very important part of any. Oh, you have a fucking slide whistle! Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Well, it's great to be here on the Nerdcast, Chris.
Wow.
Brought to you by Anthracite Coal, the cleanest burning coal there is.
Brought to you by Slippy's Banana Peels. If you're not falling on a Slippy's, you're not funny.
All right, you're listening to Tom and the Geek.
Just point out that he has two different size slide whistles.
Now, that's the professional model.
And then that's just the cheap kids model.
That's just shit for kids. They don't know. What do they know?
That sounds
they
more like a cartoon slide whistle than the other one.
Okay, by Plazometer.
I kind of like that one.
He said a Plazometer.
Oh, sorry. Too professional.
It's a little too Juilliard.
It's a little
Juilliard
too
Juilliard
clean.
School.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm hearing a symphony when I hear the second one.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, Tom did not bring two differently tuned slide whistles to this podcast.
Oh, that would have been so great if they thought I did.
You guys ready? Guess what?
Oh, please talk about slide whistles. We actually came to Tom's house on Super Bowl Sunday because I know that Tom as well, we've had this conversation.
There's a very good chance I'll spend the afternoon watching All That Jazz, which is the autobiographical film starring Rory Scheider about Bob Fosse's life, which also has the actual premonition of his own death in it and some great song and dance.
My guess is what we should do is we should get some drinks and chips, watch All That Jazz and cheer like we're a football game, and then people walk by and they lean in, they're like, "Who's winning?" And you're like, "Bob Fosse."
Yeah.
And then they watch the
Bob Fosse's always winning.
And then right after that we'll do a Pretty Woman with some tranny on the street.
Yes.
We take her to Beverly Hills and buy her forks and knives and show her how they work and
stuff. First we let the salespeople treat her mean and then we come back.
We go in first and we say, "Look, we're gonna bring a tranny in here. Be really, really rude."
That was probably what we were gonna do anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Then we're gonna come back later.
At which point we'll
taught her how a fork works.
It's gonna be a small victory. No, tranny, you don't inject drugs in your arm with a fork.
No, you eat cob salad with it.
You scoop crack on your fork and jam it into your veins.
And then we play Walking on Sunshine.
That's right.
Whoa.
And then the slide whistle, fucking credits. I mean, as a screenwriter, you really understand story structure. So that's how
this house didn't build itself, Chris.
That's how it works. Robert McKee?
Took a couple of Herbie Fully Loaded to get this, to get Stately Dangle Manor.
I want the end of the movie to be the tranny talks to the guy, and she's like, "I thought you didn't love me." He's like, "Well, just like you, I changed my mind."
Yes!
I'm trying to play Walking on Sunshine, and I don't think I have it. Walking but it's okay, because then you won't, have to pay, you won't have to clear it, because it's not anything like that.
Okay, about this. And I don't mean to make the plot convoluted or anything, but let's say the tranny is also...
I love that our afternoon has turned into a movie we're making, by the way.
Okay, so the tranny is also a wannabe clown. Like, that's the profession. And he's called Slide Whistle.
Yeah.
And because he's a tranny, his whistle slides back and forth. Oh, like
See how it works? That's what Daddy always called me. It has a lot of precious.
It has a lot of meanings.
Daddy always called me Slide Whistle.
Slide Whistle.
I think I've just introduced it. In my mind, I guess the tranny's a giant black man whose daddy called him Slide Whistle.
I thought we were all on the same page with that one.
Buying clothes and doing stuff.
It's kind of like the story of Patches.
Pretending that he's got
Patches, Slide Whistle, I know you wants to be a clown. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I know how to do is play.
Tranny. Oh.
Tranny the Slide Whistle. What?
Okay,
pretty good. Pretty Woman 2. Pretty Woman 2.
I'm going to, with my left hand, text some people at 20th Century Fox and see if we've sold this.
That's a great idea.
Great.
Can you just tweet to them? Just make it fast.
Anything? Do you think they're doing anything else today?
Probably not.
Super Bowl Sunday?
I found out yesterday who's in the Super Bowl.
I knew that...
You knew?
No, I knew...
I know who's in now.
I knew New Orleans was in it because
they've been winning all year.
I work with a guy who's from New Orleans and he had a
New
Orleans
that city lets the bon temps rouler. Yeah.
I think it's pronounced New Orleans.
Nolens. It's
The town where Nicolas Cage this year bought two homes.
Oh, really?
He was broke.
Now he is.
Now look at the first part of my sentence and then look at what you said. And I'll repeat the first part of the sentence. New Orleans is the town where Nicolas Cage bought two homes this year.
Ah, that makes a lot more sense.
Why do you need the two homes? One's in the Garden District, which I get. Lovely.
Right.
And one's in the French Quarter. Now, if you've been to New Orleans, and I'm assuming everyone has, the French Quarter and the Garden District are about an 8 to 12 minute walk away from each other.
Well,
it's not real far.
That's when you go downtown to see girls go wild. You can take a couple.
You'll
of them
be
back
in the quarter. Yeah,
and you'll be like, "Do you like this house, or do you want to see another house I have?
Or do you want to go to my vacation house that it's almost a 12-minute walk away from this house?
It's a 12-minute walk.
Yeah,
it would probably take more time to drive through New Orleans.
Oh, no
doubt,
because it's one way and confusing.
Well, Nicolas Cage, he's
maybe he just fell in love with it during the Port of New Orleans.
Now, my question is this: how do you, when in the press it says? Mm-hmm. You're broke. How do you walk into a bank and go, hey, I want to buy a house? And they're like, sure, I have two.
I need a couple mansions here.
And they're like, great, great. Do they do credit checks at that point? Or do they
I guess
just
they don't
do a
background check. They're just like, oh my God, National Treasure 2. Book
sure,
of Secrets. Was that what it's called?
National Treasure 2.
That was the sequel. That's what they called the sequel.
It was called National Treasure 2.
Yeah.
Garden of Wieners. What was it called?
Garden of Wieners. I think it's called Carnival of Slide Whistles, where he solves a circus mystery. Guys, all the clues are right here on the circus money.
And then he breaks apart the slide whistle, and the map's on
the
inside.
The map is inside the whole time.
And then he's got to roll the slide whistle in clay, and then he flattens it out.
I was genuinely disappointed when I went to
Matt, you're here.
Yeah, when I went to see that. I've been fucking with Jonah's levels since forever.
Dog, don't fuck with my levels.
What are you saying about National Treasure 2, Book of Wieners?
Jonah's got this weird voice. Anyway, National Treasure, I was very disappointed when I got there, and the line from the trailer, this dollar bill's trying to tell me something, wasn't in the movie.
Oh, it wasn't? They cut
that out? Star bill's trying to tell me something.
And I was genuinely pissed off.
Now, Tom, you make movies. When you do you
Herbie
have
Fully Loaded, and to name a few.
How much? How much control do you have over, like, once you turn in your script? Are they like, thank you,
sweet
and then that's
Christmas.
Pretty much it.
Very, very little.
Because
depending
Herbie
on the
Fully
movie.
Loaded was really good when you turned it in, right?
Herbie Fully Loaded was greenlit off of the first draft. If that answers your question.
Yeah.
It was. there were some really interesting things. That was like a sort of a gritty movie about a girl racer in a family of male racers. I'm serious. And then Lindsay Lohan got attached, and then it kept getting weirder and weirder.
You take out the rape scenes.
There's a lot of showering when we found out Lindsay got attached.
Was Herbie the Love Bug always the car?
No. For a while, we were working on something called Unsvalt the Death Bug as his like nemesis. Our background for Herbie was that a little boy had died inside of him, seeing his mother get murdered also.
Oh,
and that
yes.
That's why he was sort of had come to life.
That's going
to
leave some sort of a spectral stain. Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah, absolutely.
When that
spectral stain, exactly. Yeah.
And then a bunch of douchebags on the Travel Channel are going to come in and fuck their way through.
Why is the car driving itself around? It's haunted, obviously, by something.
Yes.
I guess it is.
What the fuck
or
else would
kit.
That be?
Or it's kit.
Or it's a brain. Yeah, it's a super brain.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anything in the original Herbie that suggested that it was a super brain. He just had a personality.
He would love to bump you in the bottom when you were looking when you were doing something funny, or he'd give you a little.
You were Don Knotts.
If you're Don Knotts, watch out when you're bending over to look at those nuts and bolts, because you might get a bump on the fanny.
There was that '60s. There was like that '60s trend of like anthropomorphizing things.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mr. Limpet, well, that was the turning a man into a fish.
Shaggy dog.
There's a lot of, personification of items and animals.
Right.
Yeah, what do you call that? Personification.
Personification, yeah. or if it resembles a man, you would say anthropomorphizing.
Anthropomorphizing, yeah, sure.
Put a face on.
What do you call it when it's fish? Pescapomorphize.
Pescapomorphizing. Don Knotts-apomorphizing.
Knotts-apomorphizing.
When everything turns into Don Knotts. I can't do it. Dana Gould has an amazing.
Well, what about My Mother, the Car? Wasn't that the dead mother haunted the car?
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. And Mr. Ed, too.
Mr. Ed, where
a guy died in a horse. And
those are
the horse.
Those, they run those on. Who here gets I Have No Cable TV, which is a life choice here at this house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
We don't have cable, but we do have over-the-air high def. And there is a channel on in LA, like it's 5.1 or 5, I think it's 5.5, called This TV.
What?
Has anybody seen it?
Is it some crazy pirate signal?
Here is, not a pirate signal, here is the mission statement of This TV 5.5 over the air HD digital. Show the shittiest movies ever made by human beings.
Period.
Period. End of mission statement. They,
you
for
could
example,
probably buy the rights of those on Craigslist.
The first night I turned it on, I'm amazed most of my movies aren't on it every night. But the first night I tuned in, it was called, it was a Richard Lewis, Sean Young movie where they had to get a dog to Monte Carlo past the evil John Candy called Once Upon a Crime.
Oh, yeah.
Also with Sybil Shepherd. And Jim Belushi. And you can kind of tell, like, the whole cast is on cocaine, like, the whole time they're making the film.
Well,
like,
that's a movie you make to sustain your cocaine habits.
Exactly, exactly. And it's also like, hey, you want to go to Rome with Sean Young for, like, a summer? Yeah, sure. And do, like, a ton of cocaine and get a doctor.
She only seems slightly kooky.
Yeah.
Let's take her out of the country and load her up on coke and then shoot a movie with a dog. Would the dog talk at all?
Dog doesn't talk.
So they just had to get the dog.
They just got to get this damn dog to Monte Carlo.
Was that dog like a purebred, belonged to
it
someone?
It is. It had like a tiara or something, a jeweled necklace or something.
Why didn't they just take the necklace? Wouldn't that be easier to smuggle than a dog?
Shit. That story doesn't hold up, does it?
Damn it.
Once Upon a Crime. Where were you when they were when they were cracking the story on Once Upon a Crime?
To the time machine.
Where's my police box? Sorry, Doctor Who. Everything's going to keep going back to Doctor Who for me. It's really good, you guys. Doctor Who
Are you watching
really
the updated Doctor Who's?
Yes.
I didn't see, and they were great, right?
It's awesome.
Everybody says they're great.
I instantly was hooked. Christopher Eccleston was in the first season. I've never seen that guy not be intense.
And then why did he not do the second season? He felt like he'd finished it, right?
I don't know.
There was some big story about like the... Well, as is always, they're changing Doctor Who.
Well, the story that I'd heard was that he was a little intense to work with, and he probably, like, his character, Doctor Who, is the way that they portray him is very, like, I'm very goofy, and I'm kooky.
Yeah.
And it was I've never seen Christopher Eccleston play anything other than, like,
tortured.
And
he's
intense.
Tortured.
Yeah. And so maybe it just hurt his heart to play a lighthearted a person for so long.
The only Doctor Who I've seen is from that episode of Extras, where Ricky Gervais's character does like a bit part in one of the episodes.
In the new Doctor Who,
yeah,
that's right.
The new Doctor Who.
That was actually in the Extras, I believe, finale, because he goes downhill from. They show just a short shot of him doing that.
Yeah, there's a slug man.
He meets his agent, and the only options left are monster on Doctor Who, and then the British version of Big Brother, which is, I guess, still a big hit over there.
Yeah,
and he says no to both, and then in quick succession they show him as the monster on Doctor Who,
and then in the house,
and he's like got some weird. He like looks like Gumby, right? He's like,
yeah, it's just like a weird gelatinous sort of. Like,
he's just like he's also not just a monster. He's like the crappiest thrown together slapdash monster they could
do. He oozes a bunch of stuff. Yeah, and gets killed. It's great. It's funny. Big Brother is still a huge hit in England. That's why they did a recent zombie miniseries based around the Big Brother house called Dead Set.
They did?
That's a good idea.
It's amazing. It's basically like the whole zombie outbreak happens outside of the Big Brother house, but they have no idea because they're...
Is it Big Brother branded?
It has like, the actual host lady.
That's an Edgar Wright worthy idea.
Now, that's the kind of shit that British television does. It's so genius. Like all those Alan Partridge series take place at different points in his life. Yeah. And then ties back to it, like that's we never do stuff like that in American television.
Because they want like how's that going to go for 100 episodes? Is probably the way,
right?
Yeah, like it's like yeah, they don't care. It's like they're like 6 episodes. That's great. Let's make a movie on TV, basically.
Right, and then they're done.
Yeah,
forever. And then
it's
awesome.
Perfect. It's like a mandala.
Are you?
The British Office only ran those 13 episodes, I think correctly, because now we're at like what 150.
I actually think that we're at exactly 100 over what the I think it's 114 or is it 150?
Yeah. Wow. It's just so there's such little now to do with those characters.
Yeah. It's neat, like because it just makes it easier to like get into a show. It's kind of like when I first heard Guided by Voices, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to go get a Guided by Voices album or two. And then you see in the record store, they have 80 albums. And it's like, where do you start at that point? How do you get into it? You know, it's time and money spent.
I always thought that about record albums, too. Like, there's the occasional Beastie Boys record. I'm like, did this need 28, 26 tracks?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or would I love it? Would I love, like, 11 really amazing ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like a 10, 11 track album.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, I don't know. I guess that's just kind of short-term thinking. Like, we made these. Let's just all let's cram them all on here for people.
Right.
So
why not take 2 years off and just keep putting records out that were that one record?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because I hear a lot of, I hear like Radiohead bootlegs and they're playing songs I've never heard.
Yeah.
And they're old. And I'm like, well, I wonder why they didn't release these. And maybe it's, maybe they just kind of go, well, this didn't really fit the theme of the album we were making. And so we'll just chuck it to the side.
As good as their music is, I bet it sucks to be in Radiohead. I just feel like there's a lot of unbelievably depressing, like, bus rides with each other. You know, where you're all just kind of, each one of you is looking out the window and not wanting to talk to the other one and just kind of quietly thinking about killing all the other ones. And
I hope that's not the case. Tom does seem intense. It
doesn't seem like they're having a goof over there.
Now,
they're not running around like the monkeys ever chasing each other around.
The other night.
What?
Tom York went to the UCB to go see a show.
Oh, yeah?
To see Garland's show.
Oh, really?
Platter, sure.
Yeah.
How the fuck did anyone stare at the stage with goddamn Tom York sitting in the audience?
I don't know.
I have a Tom York failure story, and it haunted me for a long time. But I worked at K-Rock in the 90s, which is a station in Los Angeles, if you aren't listening to this podcast in Los Angeles. Bales, slide whistle aborted. Good slide whistle to you.
Papa always called me slide whistle.
Well, that's pretty good. All hands on deck. All hands on deck.
That was my most Doctor Who-y sort of sound I could make for you.
It was pretty cool. We have to get to the TARDIS.
Strange Brew.
Strange Brew by Cream?
No, Strange Brew, Bob and...
Bob and Doug McKenzie's Take Off to the Great White North?
Yeah, do the...
By Geddy Lee?
Yeah.
Not right. Well, nope, give me it. Chris, keep talking about what you're talking about.
I'm just going to be way in the background practicing that.
Are you going to go practice your slide whistle?
So, what were you saying? Something intense about your dad, right?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you can't drink your way to love.
You can't.
No, man, you got to fucking open up and... Did you get it?
No.
That's close enough.
Oh, God, it's harder than it looks.
Maybe you should use the G.
I'm going to use
the G. Maybe you should use the G slide whistle. Yeah, no, see? No. But you know what, though? That's why that's a professional slide whistle.
We found this mouse.
By the way, that looks like a pipe bomb. You could not carry that on a plane and be like, no, it's a slide whistle.
I think you just had it.
It was pretty close.
Yeah.
Ah! It was close. It was really close. The slide whistle, I'm going to say, probably one of the most difficult instruments to play because there's no...
You know who's a great musician?
Because there's no gauge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know who's a great musician is that guy who does your theme song.
Yeah, he was amazing.
It's called... What is the words? It goes... Nerdcast, the Nerdist podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna have sex with you.
It's gonna have sex with you a couple times. It's gonna make sex on you or something.
Yeah. Don't get nervous.
Yeah,
it's the Nerdist podcast.
We went back and forth for months on the lyrics because we wanted them to be just right.
I wouldn't change them.
Well, you can't. I mean, if you pay $30,000 for something, you know, you gotta. It's set in stone. I mean, we might as well.
I don't know if I would have chosen "It's gonna have sex with you" as like the middle part. But
you don't
think so?
Well, that's called a bridge, Tom. I mean, you're a good movie writer, but...
I guess I should know.
I mean, you shouldn't attack...
Movies,
you should not attack good songwriting.
In the movies, we call the bridge the second part of Act 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but in songs, we just call it the bridge.
The bridge. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And it just kind of glides you into the third part.
It's pretty good. It's going to have sex with you, it's going to have sex on you.
It's going to have sex with or on you. I'm not sure. It's, you know, mainly there is a little bit of a language barrier, but I feel like that gives it...
Is there a box set of that guy that I could get somewhere or something?
Yeah.
You got to go to Amoeba, probably.
You have to go to Amoeba, and then they treat you bad first. They make make you feel guilty for liking what you like, and then they'll say,
yep. as a former
oh, here we go.
As a former employee of Amoeba.
Okay, here we go.
People project their own like their own worries about what they're buying. Like so many times every day, like you know, someone puts their huge thing of CDs on the counter, and they go, "I know some of this is." You're probably thinking
yep.
to yourself,
"I project all my own worries on the angry, condescending gentleman behind the counter."
Hi, how can I help you? Can you believe I'm buying this? Yes, because it's music, and music is subjective. And you probably like a song on there. Oh no, people are very worried about
that.
The cool
you would
record.
Sound like an asshole if you said that
to me. That's what they would say to me.
I went to Amoeba for the first time in a year the other day. It's really amazing. I bought that stupid. They got me with that stupid Beatles re-release box.
Oh, they did.
It was stupid, but I was not going to not get it. But then
all the mono. So.
When the cashier, I didn't get the mono. I got because like I have my stereos in stereo.
Mm-hmm.
so I also could get it on wax on play it on the Edison recorder, but I'm not going to do that.
Paul, come in here. I need you.
I need you.
Oh, that was Alexander Graham Bell. Sorry,
close.
Yes.
But actually, I did feel like. Because the quirks are so snooty, I did like you have to get the Beatles new box. They keep it behind the counter, so you have to ask for it. And the guy gave me the look of like, if I have to go pick this up and you don't buy it, I'm gonna kill you. So I was just like, yeah, I'll take it. I don't even care.
When he handed you the box, you should have looked at the bag and you been like, are these guys any good?
You heard these guys?
You
heard these guys? So good.
Who has seen? And I'm guessing you all have at the beginning. The beginning animation that opens the game, Beatles Rock Band.
Yeah, it's
did it make you cry?
Yes.
I got choked
really
up.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you not get choked up a little bit? You have not seen it.
I've not seen it yet.
I wanted that to be like an actual cartoon.
A movie that continues forever.
Yeah, exactly.
It is so beautiful.
Yeah,
I want to go live in that.
Yes.
I'd rather live there than where we live on Earth people place.
Meanwhile, John Lennon is reportedly one of the meanest people to ever live.
Yeah.
You think?
Oh. That's if you look at any of it, like the autobiography, or not the autobiography, the autobiography written in Ouija. But the biography that was written about him, this is kind of like, he was the kind of guy that if, you know,
I can see that.
If you were if you were slow, he would call you retarded.
Confrontational.
He seemed a little confrontational.
Yeah. I imagine
he had really, really, really bad childhood.
I would imagine.
I believe witnessed his mother's death, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's supposed to make a supervillain, right? Did he witness his mother's death and there was plutonium nearby?
Yeah, that's a shame.
Did he not witness his mother's death? His mother was run over by a drunk off-duty cop.
Oh, yeah, and now John Lennon kills serial killers, right? Yeah.
Yep, that's right. He hunts serial killers and he works for the Miami PD.
Not a bad comic book, The Ghost of John Lennon. Just going around.
Someone should totally do
a
John Lennon comic book, like supervillain.
I read a comic book years ago that was done as though Paul McCartney had died, and that whole Paul is dead thing was real, and it was like John Lennon was dealing with the whole
God that
thing.
Comic
like
book
Brian,
is for nobody.
Yeah, that's the most boring thing.
This should be, by the way, that should also be one of the other subplots of Watchmen. That's like the perfect other thing.
The Paul McCartney died
really to die, and then like spend like 200 pages on that idea.
Yeah, but it was like, I remember these panels with like people talking, like they were saying like, why don't the people who really wrote the songs for Paul come forward? And it showed like Willie Nelson writing Let It Be.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. This is a comic book literally for no one. Where did you find this?
In a comic
book
store.
In my own notebook.
In Cape Cod, like when I was 8.
And it's probably still in that
still
store.
There.
Well, I bought it.
Oh, you did?
There weren't many.
You have it?
I have it.
You
yeah.
still have it?
Yeah, I do.
And how does this comic book, like, what's the story?
It's the Beatles. So it's a comic book of the Beatles, and then they have this one-off issue.
Oh, so it's like Bizarro universe.
Yeah,
stuff.
Where Paul actually
if.
Did
It's a what
die.
If.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then they...
It's a doomsday scenario.
They show, like, Brian Epstein going to get the guy that won the Paul McCartney lookalike contest to be Paul.
Okay, now I hate it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Now I hate that comic book.
I'm sorry.
It's a very strong possibility I'm related to John Lennon.
That is a strong possibility.
It's very strong. There aren't that many Lennons, and they're all from the same area, basically.
Well, yeah. You know, I don't mean to brag, but I think I might be related to Edward Hardwick, who was in the Sherlock Holmes series in England.
Which one? The one
with Jeremy Brett. Jeremy Brett, yes.
Amazing. I just, over Christmas, when I was really sick and you came over, Matt, I watched, like, back to back in a row because you can on Netflix on demand. Who has that?
I do. The best Roku box.
The best.
That's why I'm watching Doctor Who.
Oh, it's the best,
except for the selection of movies they have.
It's getting better.
It grows every day.
But for TV, but for TV series, it's so much easier to license, and so you can
just check back every day because there's always more.
But
they have all of the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmeses,
and they're great.
And I had a fever of about 102, so I was just laying in bed, tripping my balls off. Watching him thinking, God, he's awesome.
Are you sure that's just a fever? I mean, your balls should...
No, they might have come... They actually attached. Went off. No, they went off for a little while.
Are you okay? Yeah.
No, I don't feel great.
I don't feel great.
What would it sound like if your balls came off? That's what I thought.
Oh. That's them rolling down the stairs.
Toward a clown.
Yeah.
And off to the circus.
Yeah. Then they go down the street. This is all stop motion. Ooh, look, an ice cream truck.
And then they... And they pull up to a gas station, and they go, fill her up, and then a guy puts the tank in. They're getting gas. And then they try to start up, but it doesn't start, and it doesn't start. All right, now let me open the hood on this. All right, let me play with the alternator. Okay, I think I got it. Try it again. Great, you're good to go. Thanks for fixing Tom's balls.
You're listening
Tom was twisting the whistle left to right, doing nothing to change the tone.
Yeah, but that was me doing. I was like performing the slide whistle.
That was him.
Some
like,
of the Hendrix stuff. Not all that.
That was him trying to do the whammy bar on
Here's
the slide
the
whistle.
Jimi Hendrix could have made. He could have played the guitar in a way that made it look easier. But the fact that it looks like he's full of passion and losing his mind and in a crazy battle, that's what I try to do. Yeah. That's what I try to do with the slide whistle. To me, it's like the devil has given me the slide whistle, and I have to fight it away when I'm playing.
Yep.
Because I don't want this devil whistle.
The devil gave you the slide whistle as punishment to everyone else around you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the the Salieri slide whistle to your Mozart slide whistle. Like I'm gonna throw this in the fire and never love.
Why?
Again.
Why God? Why implant the desire?
Thank you, Padre. Thank you.
How does he do it?
Grazie, Signore.
It's like an entire symphony of slide whistle is pre-written in his head, and he's just taking dictation.
I worry that kids today haven't seen that movie yet.
It's such a
what
great
I consider
movie.
To be, I think, other than Brazil, which is, I think, the best movie ever made, the other best movie ever made is Amadeus.
And how come, like, where the fuck did Tom Hulce go?
Where the fuck did Tom Hulce
was
go? The
hilarious.
Greatest
awesome.
Actor, like, ever.
Amazing
of the time.
In Parenthood. Amazing in Amadeus.
What did happen? Somebody quick Google. What the fuck happened to Tom Hulce?
I don't know. Oh, speaking of Toms, let me tell my Tom York story while someone's Googling Tom Hulce.
I'll Google Tom Hulce.
Let's all Google Tom Hulce.
That sounds like some sort of a government directive that's a code for something. We're Googling Tom Hulce.
I saw Amadeus pretty young because my parents just showed it to me, and I was surprised how much I was into it as a kid, like how much I liked it and thought it was hilarious.
I saw it once like when I was... Eight. And
it's
that
great.
Was
and there was also that one Christopher Guest, Billy Crystal sketch. Those guys. It's like, what's the thing called? Like,
yeah.
I remember that because, like,
oh, he gained a lot of weight.
Update on Tom Hulce: he's gained a lot of weight in the past years. But like, they had the whole thing. It's like, you see that movie, Amadeus?
Amadeus.
So, yeah. And so I always like call it that now, but no one ever remembers that sketch.
I loved those characters.
What's the thing called when you?
Yeah, 16-pound dumbbell you found running around the rumpus room. Yeah, it was such a great sketch.
Yeah.
All right. So Tom York story. I'm working at K Rock. I'm backstage at the Acoustic Christmas one year, which is one of the two yearly concerts that K Rock does. And Weenie Roast. If you're an on-air person, did that pay off the way you intended?
I had no idea what it was, though. I just was curious.
Weenie Roast is spring, and Acoustic Christmas is obviously Christmas, and not really acoustic. Anyway, so when you're on air at K Rock, you get these God badges, and you can go fucking anywhere, and it's awesome. So I'm backstage in the green room, and the year is 1996.
So that's Creep, huh?
It was just after it was after Creep. Actually, 96 would have been the Bends would have been out at that point. Okay. I'm pretty sure. I'm a Radiohead nerd. The Bends didn't come out. So blah blah blah. All right, fuck it. It's not important for the story. Anyway, I'm a huge Radiohead fan. And one of the K-Rock people came up to me and they're like, hey, do you want to interview Radiohead? Jed the Fish was supposed to interview him and he had to go do something else. And I go, sure. So I walk over to Radiohead and I'm like, hey, Radiohead, what do you want to talk about? And Tom York stands up and he just goes, this interview's over, and he just storms off.
Oh.
I guess he was pissed because Jed the Fish blew him off, and so they were, and they didn't.
And you
want
had
it.
Done, you had said one, the sentence, "Hi, Radiohead. What do you want to talk
Something
about?"
Something like that, yeah. And he just didn't like me.
Over.
He didn't like me, and didn't like that the second stringer was coming in to interview, and so.
I requested Jed the Fish.
Exactly, I know, seriously. And so later that night, I saw him at the party backstage, yeah. And I went up and I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I didn't, you know, I don't know what happened, but I'm sorry. And he didn't even respond. He was just like, yeah, you know, and then walked away. And I was like, wow.
You remember what I said about riding on the tour bus with these guys?
Yes, I know. But
okay,
for
this
years.
Is my theory about what Radiohead's like.
Yeah. Well, for years, you know, like if you have a failure voice in your head that whenever you fuck up as like a coach or something, like you'll never achieve anything. In my head, I always heard this interview is over because of Tom York.
Yeah.
And still love him.
One of one of the only things we differ in as far as stuff we like is that I call Radiohead overrated Radiohead.
Yeah, that almost rolled off really smoothly. And
overrated Radiohead.
Overrated the Radiohead.
Over Radiohead.
It works. It works though if you see it spelled out.
No, I love it.
I got yelled at by James Gandolfini.
Did you really?
Yeah. I got actually yelled at.
You mean the same guy who broke the scene in that play with Jeff Daniels in New York where they were doing a live stage show and James Gandolfini goes, hey, can we start the scene over? And,
no,
and,
he didn't.
And Jeff Daniels goes, well, I guess we're going to now.
Did that
and they had
happen?
To start it over, yes.
That really happened.
That really happened. But please tell me your James Gandolfini story.
That really happened.
That really happened. They were doing a play in a live show. Play means live. No,
that's
no
like
post.
Nickel, that's like Nicole Williams and stuff. That's
and he just stopped. He was like, oh, can we start the scene again?
Start the scene again.
Well, I guess we're gonna now. And so they did.
That's fantastic. I was sneaking around. Okay. We were in Las Vegas for that. You know,
to
they
be
moved
fair,
that,
I was in his trailer.
They stopped doing the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen, and they started doing it in Vegas, which
that's
was
that
a,
one year, right?
The biggest bummer of the history of the world. So
right.
Instead of going to the gingerbread town of wonderful fun, just fucking Vegas with fucking tits and glitter and sadness.
The land of regret and bloody rectums.
Gandolfini was there. I was there doing a show with Toby Huss, and then... my wife and I are walking through the casino and I see James Gandolfini and I do what any normal person would do. I say, let's follow him and see where he's going. So we follow Gandolfini for like a while. I'm lurking in the shadows behind James Gandolfini through Caesar's Palace. James Gandolfini is going to meet someone I know very well. My friend Lenny, who I forgot is friends with James Gandolfini.
Mm-hmm.
So I come around the corner.
So you think you got an in?
I'm lurking behind him like Gollum in the shadows and... he runs into a friend of mine who's like, Tom, what are you doing lurking back there in the shadows? Blah, blah, blah. Meet Gandolfini. Take the friend away. Blah, blah, blah. Long story short, I took his friend who didn't have any money and Gandolfini was playing like $100 hands of blackjack.
Mm-hmm.
I take the friend away to see a show. In the meantime, he loses Gandolfini, who he's there with. So I've like kidnapped his friend by accident. I've friend-napped him.
Okay.
And now Gandolfini doesn't have his buddy with him. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I see Gandolfini later and I say, hey, Lenny's looking for you. He's trying to find you. He went to Pier to go find you because I don't want him to be the guy who stole his friend.
Sure.
Because he's Tony Soprano and I love him.
Right.
And I said, he went to the nightclub Pier to look for you. And Gandolfini looked at me with more rage than I've ever seen a living human being have for anyone else. And he said, yes, I know that. It was the most horrifying thing that ever happened to me. And I was trying to tell him where his friend had
gone. Are you sure you were talking to Eddie Pepitone?
It was. I know it did sound like that.
No, that. But that's you intense. Can kind of. But
then, okay. Then a couple minutes later, he was talking to the concierge at the Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas. I go walk down the hall with my wife, and I start to almost cry because I've just been yelled at by Tony Soprano.
By one of your idols, right?
By literally, like, there's no one I could love more who could have yelled at me that would have made me feel worse.
Right.
Then he comes down the hall. Gandolfini's coming behind me, and there's no escape route. There's nowhere I can go, and I've just been yelled at by him. And I hear him coming, and I see him, and he's coming, and he's heading straight fucking for me. So I'm like, now he's going to punch me,
right?
Because he's so mad. And he comes up, and he taps me on the back, and he says, you have a show, right? And I said, yeah, I do. I do a show called Reno 911. He's like, yeah, that's great. That's a great show. I like that. And then he walks away.
Well, that had to make you feel better.
Well, here's what happened. What happened was the concierge who he was yelling at in the at Caesars did not have HBO and had never seen The Sopranos, but was a huge Reno 911 fan. So when I came up to Gandolfini and said, your friend's looking for you, and he said, I'll kill you.
Right.
The guy behind the desk said to Gandolfini, hey, you know Lieutenant Dangle. That's so cool. And Gandolfini, and then I talked to the concierge later, and I see apparently what Gandolfini said was, yeah, he's a great guy.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. After screaming at me. Literally.
Maybe just a little bit of that 28 Days Later anger chimp blood got in his eye.
Holy smoke, does he have some of the anger chimp blood.
He just got a little bit of rage.
Sprayed.
That's yeah. maybe that's just, he seems like one of those guys, just how he communicates. Like, if you go over to your friend's house and the dad's like, "What are your kids doing?" You're like, "Why is your dad yelling?" Like, no, that's just how he communicates. It's not, he's not angry.
It's just a circumstance. He was missing his friend.
The worst celebrity run and the best celebrity run I ever had. This was awesome. I, fairly tipsy, at Jerry Lewis's 70th birthday party.
Already a good story.
Which was at the Hard Rock in New York. Or I'm sorry, the Planet Hollywood was still there. Or the Hard Rock. It was one of those two places. I, quite drunk, had an opportunity to talk to Helen Mirren, who was standing right in front of me.
She seems awesome.
And I said, "Excuse me, Miss Mirren, I just want to tell you that I have had a crush on you since the movie Excalibur. I have just been in love with you ever since then, and I just needed to tell you that. And I'm a little bit drunk." I think she'll say thank you and walk away. She doesn't walk away. She stays right there and talks to me, like, for a while. So now I, like, kind of have a three-quarter boner, and I'm actually just flirting with Helen Mirren.
Is her hand on your leg or anything?
No, her husband is standing about 8 feet away.
Well. Yeah.
But.
And?
She was really nice. Nothing. I mean,
you
I ended
didn't
up just
trade info with her or anything?
No. Her husband was right there.
Yeah, but still, you know, his friends.
God, she's a hot 60-year-old woman.
She really is.
She is.
Yeah, amazing.
We all agree on that.
I'm always afraid to talk to people that, I mean, like,
because once in a while,
it usually doesn't
you get
work out well.
This interview's over.
Yeah, well, but I feel like that happens a lot of the time because, you know, you build this thing up in your mind like, oh, that's someone I could totally hang out with, and I totally, and then
turns out no,
you meet them, and then as soon as they recognize you as a fan, they kind of just glaze over.
It kills it.
That happened for me with Steve Martin. Total failure story.
Because he doesn't want the fan
conversations. No, he doesn't want the fan conversations. And
I've heard that about Dylan too. Like,
I'm sure.
The only
I'm
thing
sure.
you can't ever talk to him about is like Bob Dylan stuff.
But it's weird it not to. It. If you're like, oh, hey, what are you?
Oh, you're a guy from Minnesota who wears hats sometimes. What are we going to fucking talk about?
I like it.
Here's an awesome story.
Boy, you smoke way too much, old guy from Minnesota.
Friend of mine was at a party, and they ran out of beer. And he goes, yeah, and there was this guy with a beard on the stairs with a cap pulled down, and this British guy. And he goes, oh, I'll make a beer run. And he looks down, and he realizes it's Elvis Costello. And he's like, you're Elvis Costello. You can't make a beer run. He's like, no, it's fucking fun.
Nothing else to say to anybody. Yeah.
And he just seemed like a totally cool.
Because he doesn't want to talk about Allison anymore. Yeah.
He wants to go buy beer for people.
Yeah.
But constantly wants to talk about Radio. It's really weird.
That is the weird thing.
Overrated Radiohead.
That time it rolled off really nicely.
I've got to practice it a couple times.
My celebrity story is weird because now it's become like he's become a friendly acquaintance of mine, which is Weird
Al.
Is
it
Al.
Me?
It's weird.
It's Weird Al.
I had the same experience.
Only one of my friends who's not weird.
Yes, yep. Like he's like an awesomely nice guy, but I was always a big fan of him and continue to be to this day. Like I never like a lot of my friends just kind of stopped getting his albums. I continue to you know buy everything that came out and be a fan and.
I have the new tracks.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Nice.
The shit?
I got the new stuff. I'm supposed to keep them under my hat, so I can't. But they're awesome.
I wondered why you were wearing that hat. Is that full of MP3s?
There's MP3s under it. See?
I thought it was weird to wear a derby to a podcast.
It's like Bartholomew Cubbins. There's another hat underneath this one. And wait, look what's under there.
It's like
Tom hats and slide whistles. Lennon.
And then there's a little mouse under this one.
You are like a nesting doll of awesomeness. So you're...
Oh. I was working at Amoeba, and like I saw him, and I remember I blew it the first time I could have said hi to him.
Is that a Michael Jordan nesting doll?
I bet this.
I hope it's the. Rest
I bet this nesting
the,
doll joke is gonna
I
go
hope it's
great
the rest
over
of the '96 Bulls.
It looks like
Scottie Pippen comes out.
Oh my god! Is that who that is?
Yes.
And then who's inside Scottie Pippen is Dennis Rodman.
Where's Horace?
I'm not sure this is what the Russians had in mind when they created nesting dolls.
These were purchased in Moscow.
Steve Kerr?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That is... Wow.
That's great. I had a Big Lebowski Russian doll that came with the special edition VHS copy.
Do I want to hear the rest of your Weird Al story?
Oh, well, I saw him perform a song with Ben Folds at the Ben Folds... album release show at All Star Lanes in Eagle Rock.
I remember that place when it was cool.
Yeah, it's still they still have good shows there.
Still good.
Yeah. So like I kind of blew it because like I just moved to LA and I was like I can't talk. Like I just couldn't. I was overwhelmed. So I was working at Amoeba.
That's Tom recalibrating his nesting dolls to make sure the tiniest slide whistle on the image.
I was working at Amoeba and he's there selling just a stack of CDs, probably just all promo stuff. And I go all right, I'm gonna take my break. I'm gonna try and talk to him, and then I go up to him and I blow it. The first thing out of my mouth is instead of going excuse me
Al or something like that. I just say, Mr. Yankovic. And then like I just cringe and he turns around. I go, and then and just go for broke. I go, I'm a really big fan and I still am. And I do comedy now. And it's kind of because of you. But like it just went off and I started talking about Frank's 2000 Inch TV, which is one of like my favorite Weird Al song.
It's a great one.
And like it's off of Valpalooza.
Yeah.
But like it's just like I still put that on mixes sometimes and blah blah. I'm just one really big fan. He's like, hey, thanks. This is my wife. I was like, hi. Anyway, and then like, I was like, I work here, but I gotta go. I'll see you around, maybe. And then just walked away before he can even say bye.
The bummer part is that when you get all excited like that, it's you know because of the way our brains are formed, all those higher brain functions get taken over by that lizard's brain stem, and so you're trying to express all of these things that you would like to explain eloquently in one. Ejaculate of fear and nervousness. And so, but then he understands. I had the same thing with Al. I met him in 96 and he knew who I was because I was doing the Singled Out dating show at the time. Don't get excited, everyone. I know it's me. And you're probably feeling that nervousness right now. I'm Singled Out guy. And so,
I held the slide whistle up to my lips. I prepped it, but I didn't go. I just like to have it. I like to be ready.
I just like to know it's there.
I just want a general next time execute slide whistle.
Oh, he's not gonna do it.
No, not gonna do it.
So much anticipation.
I had the same thing with him, and then didn't see him again for years until you started bringing him to UCB shows.
Yeah. We're pretty close,
and we got to be friends again after that. And he's literally one of the nicest guys.
Yeah. It's weird because I never thought like the first person that would come visit my newborn son in the hospital. Would be Weird Al Yankovic. Like, I never knew that would be what my life would turn into. But he's like, he and his whole family, they're just about the coolest people.
And it's amazing. And it's amazing that, you know, someone, because he really was responsible for, you know, when I was a kid and I bought Eat It, just the second I started listening to that album, I just felt my comedy horizons open. Like, you can do this? Yeah. Like, it just completely changed my young mind.
I was listening to the Essential Weird Al, the recording which we hosted. And another one, I was holding my son when my son, who's a baby now, first heard Another One Rides the Bus. And I got a little bit choked up.
It was really weird,
but I was standing in my kitchen. It was the first time I was like, I'm like a dad now, because I'm playing him old-timey comedy records.
And if you go to his show now, you see people bringing their kids and like passing on the...
Yeah, it's really.
The first time I heard Another One Rides the Bus, I was actually riding on a bus, and it blew my mind because I felt like the song was inside my life. I could not understand how it could be so perfect.
Yeah. And UHF, very underrated comedy from that time.
I just watched it 2 days ago.
It holds up.
I love it.
It's like it's the smartest way to do like sketches like sketch parody of TV shows.
Is anyone doing like Kentucky Fried Movie or do they
the Fairleys are doing one right now?
Sketch based movies? Oh, they are.
Well, they keep doing them and they tend to fail. So it's really a tricky business. But they fail because they're terrible. Like I love the guys at The Onion and they're really great dudes. And I wrote something for every time The Onion does something, I write something for one of the books. But The Onion movie was like, have you seen it?
No.
Check it out. if you wonder why they don't make more sketch compilation movies, check out The Onion movie.
Sounded like a dare.
Which is amazing because, you know, Onion News Network...
is amazing.
Is like the most brilliant...
The hobo murder bill that's being read on the floor of the Senate. Have you seen that one?
That was
a senator reading about how he murdered a hobo and the bloodlust and how he saw himself covered in blood. Article 2. And then I said, I've never felt so alive. Subparagraph 1. I washed the hobo's blood. It's incredible. You got to see it.
Yeah, the actors they get for those things are incredible. Yeah. It's like they do something that no one else seems to do. It's like everyone gets like someone from the comedy community to act in these things where they actually go and cast actual like real actors. And
did you see Obama redoes his campaign goals after meeting the American people? It's just about like instead of like hybrid technology and factories with American jobs, let's try to walk to the liquor store. It's like he has come up with a whole new thing of campaigns, and it's being read by like an Obama like spokesman, and it's just perfectly played. Nice. They do a good job, but their sketch movie was terrible. What's the one? Is it Kentucky Fried Movie? No. What's the other? Amazon
Went
to the Moon. Yeah. That's the one with the Playboy Playmates, Life of the Playmate. We always used to get boners and watch that as a kid. She spends her whole day naked, remember? It's like the second sketch.
I think so. I don't remember Amazon Women as much.
It's also got David Alan Greer as the whitest black man who's ever lived, right?
Was that Amazon Women?
Or is that...
Oh, maybe it was.
That is Amazon Women on the Moon, isn't it?
I can't remember. I don't remember Amazon
Women. Take your calls on this right now.
Oh, go ahead.
Phones are ringing off the hook.
You're going to have to, A, have a time machine. If one of our phones rings right now, How fucking awesome would that be?
If you have it's a time machine, David just get Tennant. Here right
tell
now.
Us
just get, no, just get here.
Tell
just
us right here. Now. Yeah. Or just call us.
Just pull up.
Right now.
If you're a specter in this room.
Oh, you know what the bummer is? My phone's inside the house.
It's oh, probably, what if it's ringing?
It's probably ringing.
You wouldn't even know.
This is when we learned that Weird Al has a time machine. keep in mind, he looks amazing.
He looks
yeah.
incredible.
Something's up. Yeah.
Vegetarian for a while, though, right?
For 13 He's, years at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I just read a story about a guy who was 100. He was about to turn 105. He used to be a strong man in the like on the New Jersey pier. Yeah. Mm. And he could still bend quarters with his hands. And he was incredibly lucid at 104. Was about to turn 105. I got hit by a car. That's
no.
how he died. Yep.
Wow.
That's how he died.
Wow.
Got hit. They, like they. Lived, wow. That's how he had to be taken out.
Yeah.
Like
he was bending quarters, and he was always like, "I'm sorry, I used to be able to bend dimes."
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was taken out by, but he was taken out by a technology that didn't exist when he was born.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fitting.
It's fitting.
Yeah. I feel like
God
that's a good
didn't
way
know
to,
that there'd be. Yeah.
That's a good way to get taken out.
He
by
could
technology.
Fight bears and cougars and things like that.
Yeah. Right.
But the car,
you
yeah.
lose.
You lose. You always lose.
He when he was 85, he could have taken on the car. Sure. At 104, you're just too frail. At that point, are you? What are you working on now, Tom Lennon? Are you working on?
We're working on a pilot for NBC called The Strip.
You got a sweet ass deal. I read about it in one of those fancy Hollywood magazines.
Boppo.
It's
that's
yeah.
a term,
it's,
right?
The Big Bopper magazine.
It's very exciting. So we shoot it in April with Beth McCarthy's directing it, who directs 30 Rock.
Yeah, I know. I know
did,
Beth McCarthy.
10 years of SNL, and she's just awesome. So she actually directed the pilot of Reno 911 too.
You know, Beth used to work at MTV.
She
a lot of people
she did
worked at MTV.
Everything. She did tons of unplugs and things. She was like the master of live television.
Mm-hmm.
So it is set in Las Vegas. It's called The Strip. Set in Las Vegas. Set in North Las Vegas, which is the residential.
Yes.
The residential side
yeah,
where
yeah,
there
yeah.
is no far away. So it's set. It's set at a disgusting restaurant in a strip mall on the other side of Las Vegas where people live.
You know, it's funny because to me, like when you see The Strip, you kind of feel like. Ah, Vegas is gross but shiny, and yeah. then you get yeah. a block off the strip, and you're
in
a trailer park.
Well,
Orange County.
People, want, this is our second show that we're working on set in the state of Nevada, yeah. which we're sort of just obsessed with. I think I'm obsessed with the state of Nevada, and I think
when
I've
you
got
to go to Pahrump or Needles,
yeah, or Searchlight is next.
Searchlight,
but I think Nevada's so interesting because humans, without air conditioning, humans could not live there.
Right.
Yeah. Like, we would not survive. So it's identical to the surface of Mars.
Yeah, it
which is.
Is,
we could not survive. Without special equipment and technology to keep us alive there, we will not live there.
It really is.
That's
like,
why
it
I
really
love
is like
it.
If someone said, we're going to go set up a circus midway in the Gobi Desert.
Yeah.
Like, really? Mm-hmm. Why
well,
would
we can't live there. Well, we can bring a bunch of stuff that'll keep us alive.
There's a dome above yeah. the entire town.
In the old yeah. days, they would have had elephants blow with their trunks into
yeah.
vats of water that would cool and condense into
my
the air.
My parents lived in South Lake Tahoe for a bit, so I spent a lot of time in Reno.
Oh, right
and
on the coast
Carson
there.
City. Yeah. It's like, it's incredible like how desolate and depressing. Carson City is their capital, and it's one of the smallest, dumbest cities I've ever seen in my life.
It was probably
you
probably,
go through Carson faster than you'd be very surprised.
It was probably yeah. happening like in the late 19th century, like Carson City, we're on the way up.
Yeah, you know Carson City celebrates Halloween.
To the city of Reno one time.
Carson City celebrates Halloween the day after because October 31st is Nevada Day.
Right.
What?
And so they make the town celebrate Halloween.
That's where everyone dresses up like
on,
sand,
on November
and then you go and get and people give you rocks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I had to apologize to Reno because in GQ magazine I accidentally called them a disgusting trash pit.
That's Sparks.
Accidentally.
It was I was kid. It was a total joke.
They should know you're kidding.
It was a
though.
Total joke. I was Grand Marshal of the University of Nevada Reno Homecoming Parade.
That's
as yourself. The, or as Dangle.
As Dangle. Nice. Yeah.
Do people recognize you as Dangle?
Not very much. Not less and less, especially with the brown hair. Less and less.
Right.
Yeah. Occasionally,
if you had the costume on, obviously they'd recognize you.
Oh, but, for sure. Yeah.
There's but, a woman with a baby in your yard.
If that woman doesn't shut that baby up,
whose baby is that?
I don't know.
Lady with a baby.
Yo, man, that woman with that baby's getting closer, man.
She's hey, coming
let's,
in.
Let's see if the baby will say funny stuff on.
Did
the
you
podcast.
Bolt the doors?
That baby's pretty good friends with Weird Al.
Hey. Here come a baby.
Not even wearing clothes, that big.
What are we on time-wise so far?
52.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
We'll probably wrap it up soon.
52 minutes,
Tom
that means
it's
baby o'clock. Get that baby in here.
I wonder, did the guy who wrote your intro song write you an outro song?
We'll have to check.
Check through the files.
Let me just dig through the archives to see if I...
hang on.
All right.
Stretch,
it's going to take a minute to find it, I bet.
Does that mean stretch?
Yeah, it's going to take I don't understand, Tom. What are those hand signals you're doing? Why are you... Oh.
So?
what do you like about things?
All of it, but not sometimes. Mostly all the time.
Sometimes I, but then other times.
I like to do it as a treat.
A treat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just every once in a while.
You going to any Dave Matthews concerts this weekend, Matthew?
August 23rd, Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, how are you gonna wait
big,
that long?
Are you a big Dave Matthews fan?
He's a freaking Dave Matthews vampire.
I've seen Dave Matthews more than you've seen Morrissey.
Dave Matthews is his
who's
head Dave vampire.
I guess
you know,
still me.
The one of the biggest cover bands, one of the highest money making cover bands in the South is DMBCB, Dave Matthews Band cover band.
I did
a small little tour in the South once, and it's like all the guys are saying, usually we make a lot of money when we have DMBCB coming.
When Chris said, oh, we could talk about how you like the Dave Matthews Band so much, Jonah looked at me like I had terminal cancer.
Yeah, which you will get if you keep on listening to Dave Matthews Band.
It's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Here's another 45-minute jam song.
I'm not a snob when it comes to music,
me,
for the most part.
Mike Showalter and Mike Black were down in North Carolina, 14 years ago, during some state tour, and we were in some bar, and it was really super crowded, and it was like, Dave Matthews Band is playing tonight, and we never shut up and stood in the back and talked, just being dicks the whole time, and never listened to the band, and if we said anything about them, we just cracked jokes about how much they suck.
And did everyone get upset
about
that?
And then years later, I realized, oh, that was the Dave Matthews Band that we were
Oh, you didn't realize it? That
never knew. No, because we were just being assholes.
Who is this jam band?
Yeah.
Oh, I found the song.
Well, before we do the outro music, does anyone have anything they want to promote that's coming up?
I don't think we can, because when is this going up?
Hopefully it'll go up soon. We'll just promote it, and then if it's passed, then it's passed.
We got our premiere coming up.
Web Soup?
Yeah.
I'm doing The State on MTV from 1992 through 95. Some of this stuff isn't passed.
Oh, I don't understand. So people can catch that in 92.
Again, okay, for the Time Machine crowd...
So The State, it's a political show.
All of the mid-90s, I'm doing it's like a Hardy Hard goofy jamboree.
I wish you would do some type of Viva Variety kind of show.
Wouldn't that be great? Next year at Sketchfest.
You want to do that?
Why don't we do a live...
live Viva Variety.
Yeah.
That'd be done. Awesome.
You know the people there, I believe.
I want to play a character called Johnny Blue Jeans.
Perfect. Wouldn't that be great? But we don't have... we invite Black, but we let you play Johnny Blue Jeans.
I want to play an actress named Carrie Kinney.
Hey, Black, maybe you can just introduce the show, and then...
I want to give him a reason to be more awkward around me.
But he can't help it. He's just like that.
No, I love Mike. Yeah. He,
I'm sorry.
Sounds like he's tuning up.
Do you find that...
Matt, careful with that,
I'm
please.
Sorry. I just hit the button.
I want to get Mike on the show, actually, at some point, if he'll do it.
Sure he will.
I don't know if he will.
He's a very sweet guy.
He is a sweet guy. He emailed me once, and he was like,
It just doesn't come off in the way he acts.
Or thinks, or cares.
Yeah, or the things he says. But he really is.
He's just one of those super smart guys that you're like, I don't know, do you hate me right now? Are you judging me?
Mike Black and I, at our old house, were having a conversation. He was in L.A. for the day, and we sat down to, talk on the porch. This was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened. And a pigeon fell from the sky and died in between our feet. We both sat down and said, hey, how have you been? 1-1000, 2-1000, bird falls dead from the sky.
Well, you get up and leave at that point, because nothing's going to top that.
It was a pretty weird sign. It was not quite dead. It was 90% dead.
That's grounds to end a friendship. I think that's what the gods are saying there.
It felt pretty, it was pretty weird.
Is that when Mike just reached down and twisted its head? It said,
Tell Jesus I said, what's up?
Well, so our Web Soup premiere is March 3rd, Wednesday at 8 p.m. On G4. And I don't know when, if this gets up before February 13th, I'm performing in Austin, Texas at La Zona Rosa. Ooh. You can go see that.
We have San Francisco.
Jonah and I are going to be in San Francisco at the Punchline on the 23rd of the 27th.
That's the second story place.
it's
up on the second story up there.
It's in the second story of the business district, which is
right in the Embarcadero. Yeah,
yep.
It's kind of weird.
It is weird,
but it's a nice club, actually.
Great, it's a great club.
I like it. Yeah,
it's a phenomenal club. Are you doing any live shows?
No, I'm raising a baby. I'm working on a sitcom.
If you ever
in that order. Obviously.
If you ever get to see Tom Lennon live, you should see Tom Lennon live. You do stuff sometimes. We've done a couple shows.
Oh, we've done a couple shows. Yeah, I didn't open for you. I did a set before
you. Did a set before me. Yeah,
Improv. That was a great, great show.
That was a great show. The Largo show.
Anytime. Happy to do that.
That Largo show you did was awesome.
That was a really fun show. Some good folks.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, thank you for being on our inaugural Nerdist podcast, and in utter defiance, I mean, literally just spreading our assholes at sports.
It's our Super Bowl special first show spectacular.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll do these weekly. Matthew, were you able to find
I got it right here. Just say the word.
Oh. That's it. That's the guy. This is the outro music. It's guys, it's going to be even better than the intro music, I promise. And if that's even possible. Welcome. Well, when I brought him up here from Ecuador, he had never seen snow, and so he just wrote about winter stuff.
Yeah, we should make Nerdist scarves now.
Guess we'll
let's do it
next time.
Yeah, doesn't the outro usually constitute the end of a show?
Probably.
Oh wait, I don't know. Does it?
Nah.
This is the first one, so I don't know how this works. You know
Tom,
what's weird is
order a pizza.
I've never seen Tom or Los Abuelitos in the same room together.
Hey guys, what did I miss?
Tom, you went away. You missed the intro.
I was just out,
it was so good.
I was just out rolling out some pizza dough.
It's just a file. We could play it again exactly. just have to hit this button.
You really got to put some slide whistle into that song.
Oh, just overdub it.
One slide whistle to take us out. Yeah.
And he nailed it for the end.
The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.